great, great news, God would be really pumped if our families just started flourishing. If we could get rid of all the selfishness and the sin stuff of kids disobeying and parents being harsh and our lack of discipline, and we were just able to get along well according to the Bible, that would be really, really awesome. I think God wants to flourish your family. I think he does. And I think it's very possible when we ignore what the world tells us to do, and instead we just feel like, hey, let's check out the instruction manual. Maybe the author of Families has something to say about how to do family stuff. And he does. And so today we're really talking about the whole family. Specifically, we're going to major on kids stuff. However, from last week when we did our Q&A, our marriage Q&A, we had one question left over, and we're going to do that, and it has to do with divorce. When is divorce permitted, right? Now, this is appropriate for today's sermon because as we talk about how to be good kids, we can go and recognize the best way to absolutely destroy your family is to end your marriage. That's going to wreak havoc on the kids, and it's going to destroy the marital relationship. You want to destroy a family? Fastest way to do it is divorce. It is. And so I wanted to talk about that. When is divorce permitted? Are y'all nervous for me? You're nervous? I'm going to tell you what the Bible says anyway. All right, very good. So first off, Malachi chapter 2, verse 16. For I hate divorce, says the Lord. What's God think about divorce? He hates it. I hate divorce, says the Lord, the God of Israel. To divorce your wife is to overwhelm her with cruelty, says the Lord of heaven's armies. So guard your heart. Do not be unfaithful to your wife. Another version of this says, of he who divorces his wife, makes a declaration that the Lord covers himself with violence. As if to say, in breaking your covenant and being my people, you show me to be a covenant breaker as well. You say something horrible about the God, your God, when you refuse to follow. And so there's a reflection that God feels when we break our covenant, that it says something bad about him himself, and it takes it very, very personally. God makes a covenant with us in salvation. And he promises, I will rescue you, I will love you, and I will save you to the uttermost, and no one will snatch you out of my hand. Your salvation is secure. What he's saying is, I promise I will never divorce you. We see this in the book of Hosea as well, which we did 2 weeks ago, where Hosea is a godly man, and he has an unfaithful bride who cheats on him over and over and over again. But instead of divorcing her, like he could have done, God said, no, 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 go back to her, woo her, and recommit to her. And God saved marriage even in that. Now, we're going to get into some special circumstances of, hey, what about divorce? But I wanted to start by go ahead and show that, hey, when is it okay to divorce? I think God's heart is it's the wrong question. That's the wrong question. In Matthew chapter 19, Jesus is going to point this out. He says, the Pharisees came up to Jesus and they tested him by asking, hey, is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause? Any cause, just send her away. He answered, have you not read, he who created them from the beginning made them male and female, and said, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Right? So that's a longer way of saying, no, that you can't break up. You're stuck together. Imagine two pieces of paper glued together. That's what Jesus is saying. And if you tried to rip that paper apart, what would happen? It would destroy both pieces of paper. That's exactly what a marriage does. You could divorce and you will still be limping with certain scars from that 30 years later. It does awful damage to you, doesn't it? Very good. So this is a good illustration. Jesus is saying, hey, from the beginning, it wasn't always so. So here you go, verse 6. So they're no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. They said to him, why then did Moses command one to give a certificate of divorce and send her away? He said to them, because of your hardness of heart, Moses allowed you to divorce your wives, but But from the beginning, it was not so. Meaning, divorce was not God's plan. Moses let us do it because we were horribly sinful, and he allowed us to do it. But Jesus is pointing out, he's like, no, you're really not getting it. You're not getting who I am. I deal in covenant. Forever, no matter what. Same thing here. In verse 9, and I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. And the disciples said, if such is the case of a man with his wife, it's better not to marry. Meaning, whatever that sexual immorality thing meant, I don't know what that meant. It could have been if she cheats on you while you're in that legal betrothal process in first century Judaism, then the marriage is annulled and you have to divorce her. There, it was a completely different context. There's a lot to talk about what that actually meant, but like sexual morality, what is that? Of, you know, how easy is that litmus test, or how difficult? What base are we talking about here? You know, what sexual morality? Is it just plain old adultery? In which case, it seems redundant to say he who except for adultery and marries another commits adultery. It has to mean something different, and I'm not really sure. Then Jesus goes on and talks about, hey, this is real hard to say. Or for you guys to receive, but there are eunuchs that are made that made eunuchs by men. Some make themselves that, in which case it means lifelong celibate. But the big impetus that he is saying here is nope, you're married together, no matter what, and anything apart from that is lifelong celibacy. Like, whoa, and they don't like that answer at all, and even says, oh, you're going to have a hard time recognizing this difficulty. Now, let's deal with some special circumstances. I don't want to get bogged down on divorce too long. I have one major point to say about divorce. Here it is. When you get married, what makes you married? Is it you went to the justice of the peace and you signed a piece of paper before the state and the state makes you married? What is it that really makes you married? What's the promise that you make before God? And this isn't just you two on a romantic date. You know, you come to church and the pastor presides and he marries you. That's how all you guys got married, right? I would just say this. If you are thinking of divorce, let's see the way that we got married in the first place. It involved the church. If you want to get divorced, it also involves the church. So, that means pastoral counsel. A lot of us, we don't counsel at all until it's divorce. And I'm like, no. A better question. Jesus says, hey, when is it okay to divorce? And he's like, wrong question. That seems to be how he answered the Pharisees. So for us, we're like, hey, how can I get divorced? I'm like, hey, how can we save your marriage? How about let's do some counseling? Let's talk about those special circumstances. I don't have my microphone on, do I? You guys can turn me down now to just that level. I'm like, what is that? Do I have a bug on me? What's going on here? Y'all weren't going to say anything, were you? Everybody knew but me? Am I sitting up? Pastor married you? You want a divorce? You need to consult pastor as well. That way we can really discern of, hey, what's God's will? That's what the real goal is. Because I recognize there's some certain examples of, like, I know one guy, he'd been married for well over a decade, and his wife, I think, based on his testimony, I don't know, seemed like a psychopath. She was a serial cheater. She enjoyed that. And so when she was finally caught over a decade later, there was no repentance. There was nothing. She just, whatever. And he wanted to divorce. And I'm kind of like, wow, that is definitely meets whatever that sexual immorality clause was, man, I felt that one. That was horrible, terrible. But it could be that even if you had an out for your divorce, maybe they met that, they cheated on you multiple times, it could be that the Lord wants you to forgive and stay married, just like in the book of Hosea. That might be the Lord's will. I don't know. There's other circumstances. Maybe they're abusive. Maybe that their words are just toxic and just destroying you. Maybe they beat your kids. I mean, there's some special circumstances, but for sure, pastor brought you to the altar and married you. God says whatever, speaking to church leaders, whatever the church leaders bind here on earth, it will be bound in heaven. So you make that marital commitment here on earth. Pastor, church behind recognizes that commitment. Heaven says you're married too. So to unwind the process, we need pastor and church to be able to bring you together and figure out what is the Lord's will and really help you figure out what is the Lord calling you to. When anyone's getting divorced, particularly if they're Christian, they'll become like super spiritual, and it's for a couple reasons. One, they'll want to believe that God is on their side as they divorce their spouse, and they'll also want everyone else to believe as well. I don't think this is a maniacal thing. I think it's just kind of what we do in our flesh. We'll want everyone to be like, oh, they're guilty and I'm not. We're always going to look for the special circumstance as well. And really, God's heart may be, no, you need to reconcile to your spouse. Here, let's do a few more verses. I'll say a few more things and then move on. 1 Corinthians 7, 10 through 11. To the married, I give this charge, not I, but the Lord. So, Paul's not saying this. God's saying this. The wife should not separate from her husband. But if she does, she should remain unmarried, or else be reconciled to her husband. Last week, we told the story of Harriet. Her husband left her. And he was gone for 10 years. She prayed for him. The Lord did a work in Harriet's life as well, because she was no bag of roses either, and she thought she was, but she wasn't. And 10 years later, they reconciled, came back together, and God did this glorious work, so inspiring, she's considered a hero in our household, Harriet. I'm like, wow, that's incredible. So here, if you separate from the husband, you should remain unmarried or be reconciled. There's some stuff that's going on. Say there's physical abuse, or there's just toxic, horrible emotional abuse. Well, what do we do here? Well, I have some cops in the congregation right now. The cops are like, I don't know what to do right now. And I'm like, yes, you do, bro. Yes, you do. We're a whole church of good, godly, strong men. And you don't have to go at this alone. You know, you don't have to hide in the shadows under whatever torment you're going. It's like, let us have it. I mean, is there any people that would take in somebody who was in terrible, terrible times and just needed a safe place for the kids? You bet. And the church could do wonderful things in that. Of like, he's beating you. Hey, us dudes know how to actually cover down on other guys in the church who are doing something like that. Absolutely, we can deal with that. And we got a place for you to stay. We got a way for you to pay your bills. Us dudes are going to go have an intervention. And if there's something horribly illegal, he's beating on you, well, cops get involved here. That's illegal. You're not allowed to assault your wife. Wives are not allowed to hit your husbands either. That's illegal. And it may be that you separate, and he's separated behind bars for a little while. But anyway, you get help in those things. You don't immediately just like, divorce! I'm like, no, no, no. Let this breathe. Let's seek the Lord. If there's danger for you, let's figure out a way to be able to make you safe and work for healing. Let's figure out some stuff of like, you know, Becca and I were talking before I got it here today, and she was talking about like, there's stuff that could be done to the children that a mom just could never really get over. And I'm like, you just can't come back from that. And I'm kind of like, yeah, I think all of this divorce stuff needs to be done with great discernment. Perhaps the Lord is allowing you an out. Maybe. But that's something that he will reveal to the church as well. And you are supposed to consult with the church. You are. So I think that's going to wrap it up with a pretty bow on that one. I will say as a personal testimony, that if marriage was escapable, and apart from the miraculous, redemptive forgiveness and love that God has been filling me and my wife with, I think we would have been divorced years ago. I don't think we would have made it. It's the love of Jesus and the inescapable covenant that we made. There's no escape. Here's one more verse for you. In verse 39, a woman is bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if her husband dies, she is free to marry anyone she wishes. But he must belong to the Lord. That means, really, it's till death do you part. You made vows, guys. You said, I love you for better or for worse, for richer, for poor, in sickness and in health. Real quick, what exceptions did you include in your vows? If there were no exception clauses that you pledged at the altar, then there are no exceptions. You're married. You're stuck with each other. So you might as well work it out for the glory of God. There it is. If you think that you have a special circumstance, well, let's come to the church. Let's open Bible. Let's get into the nuance of that. But that's not something I'm going to publicly give you carte blanche and be like, if we're not doing real well, we won't say anything. We're just going to quietly divorce and I'll go do whatever I want. I'm like, that is not honoring God. That is not honoring God. That is a grievous sin. And again, God hates divorce. Earlier in Malachi 2, the context of verse 16, which I shared with you, was God was no longer listening to the prayers of that man. Why? He was basically cutting that man off. Why? It's because you've been faithless to your bride. He takes covenant ever so seriously, and we have made one. So when it comes to marriage, let's just go ahead and say, God hates it, and you're stuck together, so play nice. Got it? Now, here's a follow-up. What if past life, I'm a Christian now, but past life, I was married. We got divorced, and now I'm remarried. Fair enough. Hey, guess what? I've screwed up a whole lot as well. I've sinned grievously. Maybe in like all the ways that you can sin. Terrible sinner up here. And the question really there now is, hey, I was married, I divorced, now I'm already remarried. What do I do? Well, it's kind of like, the question really is, hey, can God forgive me now? And I'm like, oh, you came right to the right place. As far as the east is to the west, I can remove your sin. He is a forgiving God. Yeah, you screwed up. Yeah, you divorced and he hated it. And now we repent. And in whatever situation we find ourselves in now, 1 Corinthians 7, whatever situation you're in, that's what you're in, and we're staying in it. Right? So, there we go. I think about King Solomon was the result of a terrible, terrible union. It wasn't exactly the same context, but go with me on this. King David is seeing a very pretty and not clothed Bathsheba on a roof. He's like, hey, she's a hot tamale. Get her over here. They sleep together. That ends up being the buddy, or that ends up being the wife of a buddy of his. One of his like top 30 special operations soldiers. So he instigates the murder of him, his friend, and commits adultery with Bathsheba. That is horrible, sick, terrible, bad. And God deals with King David about this mistake. And it becomes public knowledge. It's ugly, it's bad, and he suffers consequences for it. But Solomon would come out of that marriage. And so what I see here is, even though terrible, sinful things happen, God can still give forgiveness and give blessing, right? So you've divorced before. You're remarried now. Now you know better. There's no getting out of it. And I believe God can bless the marriage that you're in now, right? So give each other a high five and we'll move on to the glory of God. All right, let's talk about kids now. This is sermon part two. Kids are a blessing from the Lord. Psalm 127, verses 3-5. Do we just need to breathe a moment? That was... Oh, guys, we made it. No one threw a rock at me. No one walked out. I love you guys. Y'all are great. Thank you for not throwing things at me. Psalm 127, verses 3-5. Behold, children are a heritage. They're a blessing from the Lord. The fruit of the womb, a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. Children are an incredible blessing. You get to kind of watch them learn how to walk and grow, and then they start talking, and then they won't be quiet. But they say the funniest stuff. My wife has this book she's been just filling in of all the hilarious stuff my kids have said. From the ages of 4 to 5, everything they said was basically wondering which animal could kill another animal. Daddy, could a lion win a hippopotamus? Like, buddy, I don't know, but we got to get to the bottom of this. This is a great question. This is an epic, awesome question. You know, it's just really, really fun. And then you get to see them grow up. And then, you know, you see them compete and wrestling matches. And they're learning. And they're getting their first job. And they're falling in love. And then you're giving them away at the altar. And then they get married. Then they have kids. Then you're like, I got grandkids. And you got something to do when you're 50 and 60 and 70 and 80 rather than just... I mean, travel. What are you going to do? Most of being a grandparent is just following around the grandkids, being like, yeah! Kids are a blessing from the Lord, right? Now, we don't always feel that way, especially now. Have you seen the modern family? Because a lot of people, though I say children are a blessing, a lot of people don't feel like they're a blessing. Maybe that's even you. Now, some of us can imagine in the modern home, because I've seen this with modern homes, kids are expensive, they're loud, just a wreck, everything's messy all the time. They're taking over all the rooms. They can be spoiled brats. Then they get a little older and they have the gall to talk back talking. What are you doing, kid? Interrupting, disobeying. You can imagine the mom counting from five. Hey, Isaac, get back in here. Isaac, I am warning you, young man. Come in right now. I'm going to count to five. Five, four, three, two, one. I mean it. Three quarters. Half. You know, he's not coming. Honey, did you see what I... He's been sitting there like I was here the whole time. But she's going to explain anyway. She's beleaguered. She's upset. Isaac won't come. Right? There's the pleading. There's the negotiating. You have exhausted parents. And there's no fun and no peace. And some people, hearing this or seeing this, could come to the conclusion of like, I would rather not have kids. That looks like the end of all fun as we know it. Now, there's two options here. One is this is a propagandistic lie promulgated by people like feminism. Once you're like, nope, do the career thing. Kids, looks real bad. Movies really perpetuate the propagandistic lie that children aren't a blessing. They're too much work. They're not worth it. I think this comes out like, I remember last year we rewatched the movie Home Alone. And I remember as a kid, I'm like, yeah, Home Alone, that was so fun. It was different watching it as an adult. I hated that movie. And it's funny when, you know, the sticky bandits are getting hit with, like, blow torches to the head and pellet guns and blow torches. So I'm like, yeah, I'm with you on that. That's technically funny. Yes, I agree. That's funny. But, man, that little brat, Kevin McAllister of a kid, that just wildly undisciplined, back-talking... He was a terror. I mean, like, no way that kid's ever coming in my house. Because the booby traps is one. But the second thing is, this kid's a little terrorist. He was terrible. And the parents were awful, too. They had no discipline. That kid got away with anything because they were awful, awful parents. And I've noticed this across movies and TV shows. It's this disrespect, undisciplined, just chaos. And when I see that in movies or TV shows, I'm kind of like, ugh, kids look terrible. And it's a lie. I know my house, my kids are, it's a blessing. They're almost always a blessing. Almost. Always a blessing. I love having kids. We had some tough years, especially when they're terrorist twos and threes. They called it the terrible twos and threes. I nicknamed it the terrorist twos and threes. You know, if a grown man did what you just did to me, I would fight him over that. What are you doing, kid? Are you kidding me? What do you mean, no? What do you mean, no? I'm like a building over you. And you're saying no to me? How do you, what courageous arrogance this kid has. It's like me walking up to a T-Rex and be like, no! You gotta hand it to him. I'm like, you are brave. That is amazing. Another thing that's possible, it's not propaganda, it's actually a living reality for some folks. The modern family, they are living a hellish nightmare that is called kids. And maybe they're joyful. You know, it's joy, I'm glad I have them, but I might fall down dead before I reach 40. And so if like you got joy, but you don't have a lot of happiness. The reason why is we're not parenting according to the book. And we need to. If you want your family to flourish, you got to do it the right way. You may be just parenting in a terrible, terrible way, and nothing's going to change. You're just barely going to survive. Count down the days until they're 18, and you kick them out of the house. For some reason, we've decided that 18 it means you get to kick them out of the house. I don't know exactly what that is. If it's a gal, she gets to stay forever until headship changes and goes into another. Dudes, I think you can kind of kick them out whenever you want. But the girls, nope, they stay. It's not a biblical thing. You don't just kick them out. That one's free. You're welcome. That one's free. And some of you girls are like, yeah, all right. Cool. Yeah. You're welcome in your father's house until you get married. All right, very good. The other thing is you've lost sight of how to parent. No discipline, or if you do discipline, it's that pleading with them. There's no real teeth in your discipline because you say you have discipline, but it's really ineffectual discipline. It doesn't actually work. There's lots of screens. I see them out in restaurants. The only way to get the kids to shut up and be still is to put a screen in front of them. And so there's the family, everyone head down in their technology. Screens all the time, screens at home, social media, TV, video games. They come home, you eat dinner, and then it's screens. Also, the modern family is completely kid-centric. Before, it used to be marriage-centric, adult-centric, so that kids are growing up to that model, and it's really all about the husband and wife being bonded together, and the kids are growing up learning it. But now we've idolatrized our children by setting them up and making it all about the kids all the time, which makes them selfish, spoiled brats. They're little Napoleons, little kings and queens, which we do their bidding. Oftentimes we try to be a friend instead of a parent, when really they have friends. They need a parent. They need someone to tell them that glorious word they can't possibly be healthy without. And that's no. You need to say no. All right, so let's break up how we actually do this. The modern family is a disaster. Let's figure out how to do it according to the book. Let's start off with the children's responsibilities. For kids, it's really simple, really short. Ephesians 6 helps us. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise. So if you're a kid, you got to obey them. If once you're grown up, you always have to honor them, but children obey. I'm not a child anymore. I have my own household. I'm not obeying my parents. I'm certainly honoring them forever. Children, you're under their roof. Obey them. Obey them in what? Everything but sin. Everything. So it's very, very simple. Children, obey your parents. That it may go well with you, and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And so let's focus really on the kid part. Rebellion against your parents is rebellion against God. There's no chance that you're disobeying your parents and obeying God. It's impossible. You're disobeying, disrespecting your husband, your parents. God is not pleased with that. And it even says that it may go well with you. Oh, disobey your parents, kids, it will go badly for you. Obey, it'll go well. Maybe you feel like your parents are idiots. Maybe you know better. Awesome. Maybe you know better. Right? It doesn't matter. Obey them. It's not obey them if you think they're right. Obey them if you think they deserve it. It's just obey. That's it. If you disobey your parents, the Lord is against you. You are literally rebelling against God. That's how he'll see it. Obey your parents. Got it? Think about Jesus. He obeyed his mom. And he was God in flesh. You know, like he stretched out the heavens and he has to listen to this woman. It's like he knows better. He like knit our atoms together. And he has to obey this woman. And he did. He submitted to her. He honored her. He obeyed her. And that's incredible. Look at that submission. I'm like, man, if God can submit to his earthly mom, you can do it too. Right? All right, so children, obey your parents. Now, parents, we're going to spend the rest of our time on you. Because it's simple for the kids, obey. For us, we've got to train up our children on how they should be, how they should think, how they should speak. Oh, well, everything. You got to teach them everything. And that's actually kind of hard to do right. But we got a playbook. Let's do some verses first because the Bible is amazing. Deuteronomy 6, verses 6 through 9. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Now, here, back up one slide, please. Notice of like, hey, walking along the road, we're talking about it when we sit down, when we lie down, when we rise, bind them up. We're supposed to be training our kids. And what I see in these verses is the assumption in Deuteronomy that you're actually doing life with them. You're around them sun up to sun down. You're with them all the time. And so as you go through life, they see how you go through life, and you're explaining it as you go. There's a recent phenomenon. It's really brand new. It feels old to us because, well, we're all like under 80 years old in here. So we get used to what we're used to. But for all human history before then, we haven't really experienced the phenomenon that's happening right now. And that's modern parenting. It looks like this. For the first time ever, we've had massive dual-income houses. Mom and dad send kids off to school or daycare all day, and then we go off to work. Then kids come back. They have some type of sport or extracurricular activity. We come home, we're exhausted as well. We gather around a dinner table, we'll talk about our day, and then they're off to do homework or talk with friends or whatever, and that's okay with you because, man, you need a break as well. Exhausted. But it's kind of like we're going our separate ways. Now, I recognize we're in different places out there, and some of you are like, man, we're not dual income. I don't know how we actually survive. And I'm like, I hear that. I wonder if there's a plan where we can make ends meet, maybe reduce quality of life. We don't spend quite as much, so we can spend a little bit more time with the kids so that we can keep more with Deuteronomy and be with them more. Because here's the rub. You're supposed to train up your kids in the way they go. But that requires practically a certain amount of time you've got to spend with them. Really, how much time are you around? If you're really, like, set it to a watch. Is it, well, really, kind of around each other? We actually had quality time for about 20 minutes, and we were around each other for like an hour and a half. And then they're at whatever woke government school for 8 hours a day, and all their friends, and you don't even know who some of their friends are. Really, it's hard for you to say you're raising them. You don't spend enough time with them. So, you know, some families, they're plugged into the government school, but they understand that the government's job is not to raise your kids. That's our job. And so they're doing all kinds of extra stuff to log time with their kids, to be able to teach them lessons. And so they recognize, hey, I'm gone a lot. And so they figured out unique ways to spend more time with their kids. Because you should. If you're going to train them, you got to spend a certain amount of time with your kids. Right? So I want to be sympathetic to everyone's situation here and just say you do need to spend a certain amount of time with your kids to raise them. I don't think an hour a day works. I don't think it just can't compete with all the other stuff. You're like, can two? I'm like, I don't know. You figure it out. I don't know. But I do know this. Deuteronomy and the Bible is expecting us to spend lots of time with our kids so that we can train them. If you don't put in the time, you can't be trained. You just can't. So there is the idea in the Bible that we're actually spending our time with our kids. And it is a new recent phenomenon where we're not spending time, right? So wherever you're at, I'm not throwing stones at you. I'm just saying, let's think about how we can be good parents and train our kids. Maybe you don't spend as much time as you'd like to. Let's figure out next year how to just spend a little bit more time, you know, and then a little bit more. And then maybe in 3 years, you're in a much different situation. So you don't have to, like, go rage quit your job. And I'm single income now. And then you're deep in debt. And I'm like, no. Figure it out. Get some grace. Figure it out. It's cool. But let's have us together as a family so that we might train. Right? Very good. Let's go into training now. Let's do rapid fire verses because Bible is amazing. Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. This is amazing. Train up your kids right, and they won't depart from it. To just underscore the point that I just made, my generation is the millennial generation. I'm the oldest of the millennials. My generation, really, I was shipped off to government schools, and then some of the time, I was in private school. My generation, really, walked away from the values of our parents. We went really woke. The millennial generation is woke and progressive. You see that in the way they vote. You see that in 80% of us, the millennials, raised in church. Once we went to college, we left church to never come back. 80%. Now, you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Here, this verse says, train up a child the way you should go, and when they're old, they're not depart from it. I'm like, yeah, we weren't really training them up. We were barely raising them. We didn't see them enough. If you are seeing them enough and raising them enough, they'll get it if we train them right, and they won't depart from it when they're older. Train up a child the way they should go, and when they are old, they won't depart from it. Right? Very good. Proverbs 22. Let's go into another proverb. 13:24. Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. Now, you can take this metaphorically, for the rod stands for discipline, but the Bible actually does mean it physically as well. That means it is okay to spank your children. Particularly, you know, like 1.5, he's yanking on the TV cords, trying to get the thing to fall and make him a flat baby. And I'm like, I don't want a flat baby. I like a round, chunky, you know, chubby baby. I like that one. So quit. No, no, no. You grab his hand and you're like, no, no, no. Right? He doesn't understand. I can't make his little nebulous blinking slug brain understand the flattened principle with plasma, TV. So you're like, no, no, everyone speaks pain. No, no. What am I doing? I'm loving him. You know? The progressives are like, you child beater. I'm like, all right, awesome. Yep, you got it figured out. I'm loving my kid here. Here, let's do another proverb. 29:17. Discipline your son and he will give you rest. He will give you delight to your heart. A disciplined kid is a happy kid. A disciplined kid is loved. If you're not disciplined, like Hebrews 12 points out, then you're not loved. One more proverb. Here we go. Last one. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. An undisciplined kid is a miserable kid. No one wants to be around them. They end up becoming lonely because the other kids don't want to be around them. You don't do play dates because the other parents don't want to be around your little terrorist gremlin. And it's because the kid is undisciplined. But a disciplined kid, they're happier. They're doing much better. I asked my youngest son to help me with this sermon yesterday. I'm like, hey, buddy, come here. Come in here. Give me some parenting advice. Would you mind? Tell me, what should I share with everyone? And he's like, okay. That's my youngest. Okay. He was immediate. He had a list already. He's 10. He had a list. He's like, one, obey. You need a wall of obedience, or a wall of discipline, was his words. And that's not my words. That was his. A wall of discipline. And I'm like, what does that mean? It's like, well, when we obey you, things go well for us. And when we disobey, things go bad. I'm like, I like that, buddy. That's good. But he recognized, obey, it's easier to just obey mom and dad. We're happier, things go well, and when we disobey, things go really, really bad. We'll unpack discipline here more in just a moment, because sometimes we're disciplining, and your discipline is this left-handed, limp-wristed, soft baseball throw that's not going anywhere. It's not real discipline. I'm like, get into your right hand. Go stand in the corner for 15 seconds. You know, like, nope, that discipline doesn't work at all. Anyway, my youngest said, well, discipline. Don't let them have everything that they want. Don't let them do screens all the time. And then the third one was my favorite. He says, and if they want pocket knives, you should give them pocket knives. And I did. It was too cute for me to even pack it, unpack it. I'm just kind of like, that's awesome. All right, here, buddy. That's good. Here you go. All right. You got me. You got me, kid. Way to go. And so, but it was interesting that my 10-year-old, the very first thing he said was discipline. That we need discipline. Why? Because kids, folly is bound up in the heart of a child. I was speaking to a buddy recently. I'm like, well, I love my kids. They're better. They're better humans than I am. And I'm like, well, hold on. I don't like this mindset because the idea is, oh, they're angels and they don't need it and I got a big problem. That's why all of our TV shows and movies, the dad is always apologizing to the kids and the mom at the end and they're teaching him a moral lesson. And I'm like, no, this just completely flips the whole concept of family. And it said, no, you discipline the kids and you're equipped to do it. Your little angels have not been tempted. They have not been tested. You don't really know what character is baking under the surface right now. Right now, Their big challenge in life is whether they actually do the dishes like you told them to or not. That's it. They haven't met drugs or temptation with the opposite sex, and they haven't even met hormones yet. I'm like, bro, hormones is tough. They haven't even begun to be tested yet. So don't immediately think your little angel is like, no, there's a petri dish of growing sinful character that needs to be refined now. You're giving them too much credit. I've been walking with the Lord for over 20 years now. I am further along than my kids. They just haven't had the opportunity yet to sin grievously. And I want to train them up now because folly is bound up in the heart of kids. You parents do actually know better. The kids don't know better. You know better. Right? Folly is bound up in the heart of kids. When from their 1 year old, they'll come up and like, that's mine. And they won't share. They're born selfish. No one teaches your kids to be selfish. It's the default setting. Then you have to painstakingly teach them things like sharing and don't fuss and stop whining. Don't interrupt me. Don't talk back. You got to be able to discipline your kids in this way. Now, let's unpack discipline. I want this to be extremely practical for us. Discipline involves the setting standards of what you will and will not tolerate. This should be consistent and it should be clear. Do it the same way every time. So in my household, we tell them once. We never count down, counting from 5, 4. No, I don't negotiate with terrorists. I'm going to tell you one time, buddy. I'm going to tell you one time. But you to go do morning chores, and they're off to do morning chores. I'll tell you once. And we're getting to the place where we shouldn't tell them at all. You just do what's needed to be done. I tell you one time. Then, once I tell you, the answer is yes, sir, and you have a good attitude about it. That's our standard. Now, if you don't do it that one time, then it really just becomes cold, hard math regarding discipline. I'm like, all right, hey, come here, bud. You didn't do your chore. Why did you disobey me? Okay, you just didn't. All right, I'm sorry. Now you're going to have to do twice the chores. And I'll give them something else to do. All right, and if they keep disobeying or they're back talking, all I do is just keep upping the penalty until it's awful. It's just terrible. I'm like, all right, all your toys are gone now. You're not, what toy is their favorite? Well, that's disappearing for a day. You know, they talk back, they scream, all right, 2 days, great, come on. A week, good. But you're still going. I'm going to burn it in front of your eyes and throw the ashes in the sewer. It sounds unloving. It is not. I'm disciplining my kids. And what I'm showing them is, hey, the cost of disobedience is not worth it. It's easier to just do the stupid chore. Just do the chore. The chore is for your benefit, like go clean your room. I don't care. It's not. My room isn't a mess. My room's quite clean. Go clean up your room. It's for their own benefit that we are giving them this discipline. So in my household, we're just telling them once, and we have a graduated cost of disobedience. Oh, you're going to be in your room for an hour alone. Some of you are like, 5 minutes. 5 minutes isn't anything. They're not learning anything. What you're teaching them is the cost of disobedience is really low.
Oh, that's nothing.
I don't care. My mom, I was an older kid. My mom, it was one of the last times she ever paddled me. I was really too old to get paddled. If you're getting spanked and you're over 6, you're doing it wrong as a parent. Like by the time they're 5, 6, 7, it's just too old. You should be able, now you can do words and stuff. Now it's confiscating toys and giving work. It's really just those first few formative years where they haven't developed enough to understand things as much. So, no. But my mom paddled me, spanked me. But I was a bigger kid. I had a pain tolerance. It didn't hurt. And I even let her know. I turned around and smiled at her. I did. It was my pride, right? My pride. That didn't hurt. She's like, oh, okay. She turns around, and I'm like, oh, got off the hook. And then I heard heavier footsteps coming back. And there was Dad. And he took over paddling. And that was not funny. That was not funny at all. So, very good. It was a graduated cost of disobedience. If your kids are disobeying you, it's because you are not making the cost of disobedience high enough. Also, it should be easy for you. Of like, you don't have to stand there, and if you're just watching them do the chore, and they'll come up with all these neat con men ways to get out of it by questioning, and like, I can't do it, my hands don't work, all of a sudden. They'll come up with anything to keep you involved and wear you down. I'm like, hey, no, Windex all the windows. I want no streaks. Here's that, figure it out. Don't come back until you're done. And then you go about your own business. And then they'll come in like 30 seconds later with three questions. I'm like, nope, out, figure it out. That's good, problem solving. Nope, go figure it out. Get out, or I'll give you more chores. And they're like, oh, I don't have an in with that. Then they just have to do it. How long do I have to do this? Till it's done. So, 30 minutes, 6 hours, I don't care. Go at your own pace, doesn't affect me. I'm gonna go outside and lay out in the sun. It should be really hard on them and really easy on you. Moms, you're beat, you're exhausted, you should not have to lord over their chores or whatever. Like, they want to do it, like, hey, dig a hole. Dig a hole you can hide in. There you go. I'm like, can't screw that up, kid. You just let them do the thing. Again, it is discipline. It is a hateful thing to not discipline your kids. You are making them spoiled brats that are making them miserable and you miserable. Discipline your kids. It's part of training your kids. To train your kids mean you discipline them. Another thing that goes into training kids is explaining things. Here, I've got the idea. I tried pretty hard to do the Southern Baptist thing where I did like the alliteration and I didn't come up D-S-D-S-D-E-A-S. I didn't come up with anything. So we are not Southern Baptist. I almost got us there. We're in it just non-denominational. So we're just... We have no acronyms. Southern Baptists always have cool acronyms, alliteration, and I couldn't do it. Couldn't cut it. All right, so discipline is what they shouldn't do. Part of training your kids is to give them discipline. The next piece is explaining what they should know. This is everything from, hey, this is how we do finances, we're doing savings, and my kids right now have an egg-selling business, and so they have to go down every morning and every evening. They take care of the chickens and keep them alive, and then they get all the eggs, and then they sell them at our homeschool co-op, and we're teaching finance, and then they immediately take a part of that, and that comes back to offering box here at the church, and then the rest goes to savings, and some of that goes to a toy that they're saving up for, something that they want. We're teaching them finances. We're teaching them how to wash dishes. We teach them how to cook. That's coming up soon. And make coffee. I'm going to have you boys making me coffee soon. It's going to be epic for this guy. You teach them about the birds and the bees. And you teach them about everything under the sun. I'm going to teach you how to drive. You know, they're young right now. Right now they ride. They can drive side by side. That's a, I don't know. 1,000, 2,000-pound machine, but they're driving that around our property. You know, I'm like, all right, good. Next is I want them to drive a vehicle. I'm like, what if mama's hurt and they need to, you know, I don't know. They're coming up on that, but we're going to teach them everything, but we explain how to do everything. All of life, everything that you're using as a man, teach your kids. Everything you're using as a woman, teach your kids. Your job is not just to discipline them. Your job is to teach them everything. Explain life and all the tasks and duties that they need to know as an adult. So that when they reach adulthood, they know how to iron and wash clothes and just that stuff about being human and alive in 2024. Discipline, explain. I'm wrapping things up. I got two more points and then we're done. So I'm kind of closing in the next few minutes. That's good. I say that, watch me just get carried away, and I'm telling stories, and I'm doing my dance, and I go way over. But right now we're looking pretty darn good. I'll have you out of here. All right, the next thing is assign what they must do. This is absolutely crucial. There is no scenario where you make a kid into a successful, well-balanced, healthy adult if you don't load them down with all kinds of chores and work. I don't know you, I don't know your family, but I'll go ahead and say this on a limb, you're probably not working them hard enough. Lily, just give me a little light. You're probably not working them hard enough. It's part of character building. And the goal is that when you're a little kid, you know, like 3 years old, age, have fun, kid. Your job's to just play all day. Experience the world. This one's on us. We got you, kid. And then they start growing up, you know, they're 5 years old and they have little tasks that are helping. You ever been helped by a five-year-old? That's not helpful. It takes their, oh, daddy, I'll help. I'm like, correct. It's going to take me 3 times longer. No, don't do that. You have like spinning saw blades on the table. Like, whoa, I've got enough help. No, but you do it anyway because it's fun, daddy, memory kind of stuff. But there, help, it's not helpful. But we're doing stuff so that we can include them because we're training them up on how to be productive workers. One terrible thing that you could do is you raise them up in teenage years and, you know, college, and then they finally get out at 23 years old, 20, I don't know when people graduate college anymore. They're in there for ages. But say they get through and they've never really had a full-time job. They've never really had to pay bills. You have done them a wild disservice because they've been able to extend this little tiny boy or girl season all the way till they're big. No, you should be working. You should be doing chores. That's part of becoming an adult, is shouldering huge responsibility and work. You're going to work your whole life. And guess what? If an adult doesn't work, say one of you, you just won the lottery, which you shouldn't have been playing anyway. It's stupid to play the lottery. Obviously, the odds are stacked against you. But anyway, you played the lottery, cha-ching, you win. I'm retired at 40 years old, and you're just going to kick back your feet. What kind of person will you be at 42? Impossible to live with. Complete, spoiled, selfish narcissist. Everything is about you. It's actually in work and service that we remain healthy. It's an interesting statistic that those older folks who choose to retire usually die within a few years of when they stop working. Older men, I don't think you should ever retire. I don't find that as a biblical concept. You can stop working the gig that you're on now and shift into another way to be a productive member of society. All right, you're retired from that job. How are you going to add value? The moment you stop adding value, you physically kind of atrophy. You get mad at the kids that are on your lawn. You find all kinds of curmudgeon, cantankerous things to whine about, and then you die within a couple years. When you stop moving, you start dying. So no, men are supposed to add value. Women, you as well. So you can shift your mission later in life so that you're not slogging away 40 hours a day at a job you hate. You're like, nope, I'm going to give myself to ministry. I'm going to hang out with kids and help, you know, raise them up in some ways. I'm going to get a part-time job or something. I'm going to volunteer my time and do such and such. You could do anything you want, but don't stop moving. Don't stop adding value. You don't get to retire. Maybe you don't draw a paycheck anymore, but never, ever stop moving. And the moment you stop being valuable to anyone else, you dry up. You become insufferable. What's true for adults is true for kids. You want to make them spoiled? Don't make them do any chores. Don't make them do any work. What do we do? If you had to put a time on the how much time our boys spend doing chores per day, what would you say? At least an hour a day. Sometimes it may be 4 hours in a day. That's uncommon. That's like I'm out doing some project with them shoulder to shoulder. Can we stop? Nope, don't ask me again, bud. We're done when we're done. Men work. This is what we do, and you're becoming men. But at least an hour of chores each day. Maybe it's closer to 2 hours, and now that's what they actually like their work. They got responsibility. They hold the chickens in their hands. Life and death comes in the midst of their responsibility. If you don't take care of the chickens die. I keep saying chickens like that's the only thing you do, but it's just in front of my mind. They do all kinds of chores all the time. They have morning chores and evening chores, and then there's some kind of special thing that's helpful to mom somewhere in 20. Just mom saying, I'm going to get this stuff off my plate and onto theirs. Some of you women, you are working way, way too hard. If a child can do it, you shouldn't be doing it anymore. Load them debt. You are working way too hard. And you feel like, and you're doing it because you are a loving mom. you're loving the wrong way. You think love is you doing everything for them. And that is, you were just, now you know better. No, love is actually discipline, like the Bible says. Load them down with chores. All these kids hate this. Hey, check it out. I know you don't feel it, but I'm going to make you better adults. And you'll be happier, too. You'll be happier, too. There's going to be a lot of interesting conversations in the car. Daddy, I don't think he's a very good pastor. Oh, interesting. Why do you say? I don't know. I just don't. His jokes are bad. Don't you? My jokes are epic. They're pure fire. They're a dad joke. Holy good. It's like my spiritual gift. I don't know what spiritual gift you got. I got dad joke, and I think they're epic. No one else thinks so, but I do. In my heart, I know my dad jokes are pure fire. We discipline our kids. We explain the world to them. We assign tasks, chores, work. Teenagers should have jobs. And then the last thing is show. We are modeling how we should live. This is where it gets real fun. That we model, hey, this is how we do marriage. This is how we disagree in marriage. This is how we solve conflict with friends or with neighbors or, you know, people we work with. This is how you say, I'm sorry. You know, if you're, hey, guess what? You're not going to be a perfect parent. And within the week, you're probably going to do something. You get upset and you rebuke your kids and you're harsh with them. Punishment, we shouldn't be disciplining in anger. It should be calm, cool voices. If you're disciplined and you're upset and angry, it's because you're disciplining too late. You waited until you were upset, harried, frazzled, worn out. Hey, I told you! If your voice is raised, you're disciplining too late and too easy. It should be much easier. You should have caught it earlier. Your kids are driving you crazy. Hey, kids, upstairs or outside? Go! Disappear! Hey, can we out? And you banish them henceforth. And when they come in, we're bored. Great, I have chores for you. We're not bored anymore. And then they're gone. In our house, boredom is synonymous with chores. It means the same thing. I'm bored. What am I going to entertain you, kid? Go be creative, entertain yourself, or I will give you chores. Just cold hard math, right? Anyway, let's say that we do get harsh, and we shouldn't be harsh. We shouldn't be yelling at our kids. If you do discipline them after the punishment, you come back. Hey, buddy, you understand why we had to do that? I love you. Hug. It's gone. When I see you next, I won't be thinking about that. And then they're done. The relationship's restored. We're gentle. They understand. We're disciplining them because we love them. We're not disciplining in anger. No shame. No cruelty. No coldness. No walking on eggshells. No guilt. No shame. None of that stuff. Right? Awesome. Good. Relationships, conflict. Hey, kids, this is how we work. I'm going to show, I'm going to model. This is what it means to be a man. Men, we work hard, and then we rest in the glory of God, and then we spend time with our families. This is what it looks like to be a man. My wife is showing, this is what it looks like to be a woman. This is what it's like to be a mom. This is what it's like to be a wife. We're showing and modeling. You are showing and modeling what it's like. Hey, this is reading. This is how we worship. This is how we read Bible. This is how we have fun. This is how we build memories. This is how we rest. All of it. However you're doing life, you are showing and modeling. Now, the problem comes in is if your explanations of how to do stuff doesn't match how you are modeling it, they're going to reject your modeling. And ultimately, when they're grown up, or 18, or whatever age, somewhere around there, they're going to figure out that you said one thing but lived another. And they'll write you off. Let's model how to do everything. For us in the Lovell household, these are kind of my last points, and we really are closing. In my home, we spend tons of time outside. We'll do chores together in special projects. If you came into our living room, you'd notice our living room, and really our house doesn't look like a modern home. Our living room, for instance, there's no TV. Our bedrooms also have no TVs. We don't have tablets lying all over the place. In fact, we're a house of books. Our living room is filled with books. That's our clutter. And our furniture faces in because we're spending time talking with each other. We have a wild amount of board games and stuff that we can play with every single night. It's daddy reading time and the whole family comes in. to the living room and I read and my wife is on sound effects and I try to get her to rub my feet. But I have gross feet, so that usually doesn't work out great. And so, it's an inward-facing home. We're not addicted to screens. We're spending time. It's a peaceful, joyful, restful, and loving home. You guys get to decide whatever home you want is what you get. You fight for it the right way according to the book. Some of us you're very loving, but we're not loving the right way. We're supposed to show our love to our kids through training them. And training looks like this. Discipline, explanation, assigning tasks and chores, showing them how we live. All of it together models how kids should grow up. Now, when this works really well, your family starts to flourish. And then it just becomes wild fun. We can't relate to Home Alone. We can't relate to that. Our kids don't back talk us. Our kids don't say no. Now, that's not always been true. We've been trying to figure this out. But we've made all the mistakes, all of them. Just everything we can do, we're figuring it out. Parenting is really hard, but I'm just telling you, Becca and I have made some wonderful gains by parenting according to the book. Now, I hope that I haven't crafted too idyllic of a view. We still have fights, and me and Becca are still sinful, and we've got to apologize and like, hey, buddy, you didn't do anything wrong. I took something out on you. I burned out. I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? Yeah, Daddy, I do. Listen, I'm repenting to your kids. It's okay to repent to your children. We repent to our children because we're just, guess what? We're trying to be good parents and we're nothing like God the Father, who's a great father. I'm terrible next to him. All kinds of impatience and selfishness and moods, and I get worn out and I can be harsh. And so I don't want you to think that I'm crafting this idyllic utopia picture of how we're parenting. We're still figuring stuff out. Is it okay that we have not arrived as parents? Is that okay? I'm your pastor. I have not arrived. I'm getting better. We are a house of peace and joy. It's mostly fun. Also, some days it's really hard. Some days we just survive them without killing each other. You know, like, I am grumpy and I'm going to disappear. So you have a bad day. I'm not talking about that, but I wanted you guys to be able to be filled with some very practical stuff to make our homes flourish. What happens when our houses flourish? It sends this beautiful gospel message to the rest of the world that allows us to be successful in an area they have no idea how to do it. The world doesn't know how to parent. They don't know how to be married. They don't know how to do family. They don't, and it's because they don't know how to worship and follow God. And when our families are flourishing, we send a testament to the world everywhere that our God is good. Our God is a good father.